B2B buyers are going to be segmented based on intent or buying signal. And so that means fundamentally, you're going to have two kind of core segments. You're going to have customers that are inside their buying window, meaning they're highly likely to buy soon, today, tomorrow, this week, based on their own behavior. The second segment is customers that are outside their buying window. They're not really telling us that they're ready to buy. They might be opening an email, they might go to the website, but that's what I talked about around creating desire versus just capturing when that person is ready to buy. That's how you want to segment. It's not based off of engagement. It's based on the customer showing you, hey, I'm ready to buy, or hey, I'm not ready to buy.
You're listening to the Keep Optimizing Podcast to increase your traffic, improve your conversion rates, and grow your profits.
Hello and welcome. I'm Chloe Thomas, the host of this e-commerce marketing focus podcast. If you're not familiar with our format yet, well, we release 5 episode mini series that each dive deep into one e-commerce marketing topic. It could be channels like email or SEO or Facebook ads, or a big topic like acquisition or retention. In each episode, new ones released on Wednesdays, I interview a different expert to explore the latest advice on making that marketing method work for you. And then, after each 5-episode mini-series, we take a week off to give you time to take action on what you've learned. At the moment, we are picking up the email marketing thread again. So in this episode, we're getting into a topic we've never covered on the show, your B2B e-commerce email marketing activity. Now, I know a lot of you are running B2B sales alongside your D2C activity, so I'm hoping you'll all find this episode super interesting and helpful. Kyla knows a huge amount about B2B e-commerce email marketing. In fact, it's all he does. And he'll be sharing us how it differs from D2C. The platforms you use, the formats of the emails, how you segment, how you send, why newsletters are more important than flows, and lots of other B2B email intricacies. So do make sure you listen right to the end of the episode, because he's got some great quickfire insider tips about the whole of email to help you as well. I think it would be impossible to be in e-commerce and not have heard of Klaviyo. Over 193,000 brands in over 80 countries use Klaviyo to drive their email marketing, SMS campaigns, and sales performance. The way Klaviyo are incorporating AI and personalization across the platform is one to watch for all of us, enabling their users to really push ever upwards the performance of their customer communications. If you want to see what you can now get with the Klaviyo platform, maybe have a poke around to work out if it's yet time to migrate, then you can sign up for a free trial right now. Just head to keepopt.com/Klaviyo and find out if it's time for you to make the move. In this episode, I'm chatting with email marketing expert Kyla Nixon. Kyla is the co-founder of Forward Studios and host of the Darn Good Distributors podcast. And he's all about B2B e-commerce, especially how to use email marketing to grow B2B e-commerce sales. Hello, Kyla.
Hey, Chloe. Great to be on. I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
Very excited to get to chat to you about this too. We don't cover enough B2B e-commerce stuff on this podcast, I don't think. And it's going to be very cool to get to dive into it with you. But before we get into all of that, how did you end up in the world of email marketing?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. In B2B, if you talk to anyone who's been in B2B for any amount of time, you kind of accidentally stumble into B2B. I don't find anyone who's very intentional, like I went to school for, you know, B2B, right? Kind of accidentally fall into it. And that was my story as well. I ran a marketing agency for 6 or 7 years and actually worked in the mom parenting and baby space. So about as opposite of industrial supply as you could possibly imagine. And I was specifically working with course creators, membership creators, with some of the largest brands on Instagram. Like families and parents with young kids would be familiar with some of the brands that I had the opportunity to work with. But in doing that, I really learned about how people buy and what makes them buy, and positioning and differentiators, and how to understand problems and then write to those problems, and messaging, and all of these things that like kind of go along with serving a really sensitive kind of audience in the mom parenting and baby space. And I was getting to a point where I was feeling a little bit burnout in that role, kind of ready for a change, candidly, maybe a little bit bored as well. And I was approached by someone who said, hey, would you come do some consulting for us? We're a B2B e-commerce company. And I said, I don't know I don't know anything about B2B e-commerce. Like I know next to nothing, maybe even less than nothing. And he's like, that's all right. I want someone who doesn't necessarily know the space. And so I did some consulting for them and their team and really started to enjoy it. He offered me a job and I said, no, I work for myself. I will not be taking that job. But he was very persistent, came back a couple months later, brought me on to do some more consulting. And ultimately, I ended up taking a job for a mid-market B2B distributor as a chief revenue officer. So I was over marketing, sales, product, and service. And we were in the green industry. So we sold to nurseries, landscapers, greenhouses, universities, parks and rec departments, golf courses, a ton of really fascinating spaces. But I got thrown into it, Chloe. Like I'm telling you again, I didn't know anything. Like my first day, they said, we got to make an update to the ERP. And I said, what's that mean? Like, what are those letters mean, right? And so I really had a 2 or 3 year crash course in B2B e-commerce, like totally immersing myself in it and really fell in love with the B2B space, B2B buyers and the B2B customer journey. So I transitioned out of that role about a year and a half ago and really saw that there was a huge need and a huge gap specifically around email marketing. I was talking to a lot of distributors who were sitting on very large lists of contacts and it was just in a MailChimp account somewhere. Or they said, yeah, we mail our lists once a month or you know something along those lines. So I really felt like it was one of the most underutilized channels in the B2B space. And so me and a partner said, hey, let's do something about it. We're both really well-suited to serve this audience. And so that was kind of the roundabout way of how we got to where we're at. But it's been cool because it was we're able to combine a lot of things that I did in that mom parenting and baby space with, again, my kind of knowledge of B2B e-commerce now. So
one of those journeys that makes complete sense when you look back on it. But yes. No sense at all at the time.
100%. 100%.
Now, pre-hitting record, you and I were ranting about definitions in B2B e-commerce and what one person's B2B e-commerce is and what another person's B2B e-commerce is. And obviously, what we're going to be talking through can be applied in any B2B e-commerce sector. But which is, when you talk about working with distributors, what sort of B2B e-commerce is it you're usually doing?
Yeah, this is going to be the longest definition you've ever heard. So we primarily work with distributors. So these are folks that do not necessarily manufacture their own product. They're selling various brands to a specific customer group or to a specific product type. So that's kind of how we think about distribution, but they're primarily selling through e-commerce. So most of our clients, over 50% of their sales are coming through e-commerce, meaning someone is going online, they're placing an order and they're never interacting with a human, which for all the D2C folks listening, they're like, yeah, that's e-commerce. In B2B, that's not necessarily always how it works. There's a lot of B2B brands who are doing millions of dollars a year and they're doing it over the phone or they're doing it through an order portal and not through traditional e-commerce. So the types of clients we're working with fundamentally look like D2C brands. They're selling products to an end user, to someone who's going to be purchasing that product. However, they're selling industrial grade, commercial grade, wholesale. They're selling things that are meant for a business use case, and they're doing that through an e-commerce platform.
Got you. Okay, there we go, everyone. That's where Kyla's coming from. But as I said, everything we're talking about today, a lot of it will be applicable whatever type of B2B e-commerce you're doing. And let's not get back into that debate again, because that will be the end of the podcast before we know it. So, Kyla, we talked about B2B. Then what you're doing is you're doing B2B e-commerce email marketing. How is that different or isn't that different from standard D2C e-commerce?
Yeah, I think most folks listening to this, whether you're a D2C brand or not, are familiar with the traditional D2C playbook of email marketing. It's beautiful emails. It's a lot of emails. And it's usually segmented based off of someone's engagement. Are they opening our emails? Are they clicking our emails? Or are they not, right? The thing with D2C specifically is those emails are meant to create desire, right? I have a brand of jeans that I love called Mugsy Jeans. They're based out of Chicago here in the United States. And if I got an email from them today that was a good deal or a new product, I might buy that pair of jeans, even though this morning I didn't wake up saying I'm planning to buy a pair of jeans. So D2C email marketing can create desire and it should create desire. B2B marketing does not function like that. Business buyers don't wake up today saying, I think I'd like a new widget for my shop or whatever. They're buying because there's a project that they're working on. They're buying because of a repair, replenishment, replacement. They're doing something, they're buying something that was initiated by a need, right? You're not creating desire for that customer. So fundamentally, the difference there is we don't want to create desire because we can't in B2B. We want to understand where the customer is at in the buying journey on the B2B side and be there when they are ready to buy. So there's a few ways that we can get into on this episode, but really we segment very, very differently in B2B than we do in D2C. And we format our content very differently in B2B compared to D2C.
So same overall objectives, but we're doing it in a very different visual way.
Correct.
And a very different way in other ways too. Okay, cool. Correct. Looking forward to getting into all of that. Now, are we using special platforms or are we using the same platforms as a D2C business would use?
Yeah, for us at our agency, we use Klaviyo primarily, which is a very D2C tool. I kind of joke with the Klaviyo team. I'm like, y'all are really like hurting us here because their entire market positioning is around B2C, but it's a very powerful B2B tool as well. At the end of the day, like, business buyers don't check their consumerism at the door. They're still expecting to be able to purchase similar to how they do in their personal life. There might just be a different reason for why they're buying. So we personally use Klaviyo. I would say in the B2B space, there's other tools out there that maybe are a little more suited for B2B, but fundamentally platform-wise, like, it's a great tool for B2B as well.
And of course, for anyone who's D2C and also running B2B, of course, you can run it on the same account.
Correct.
Which...
Yep.
Create some level of complexity, but it's also a lot easier than having two accounts.
100%. Yeah, 100%.
So, Kylie, should we talk about flows and automations, or should we talk about newsletter sends first? What do you reckon?
Let's talk about one-off sends and get into that, and then we think about flows as supporting that journey rather than and kind of plugging the gaps there. So, I think starting with the one-off sends is probably the best way to start.
Okay, so what one-off send should we be doing? I guess, actually, let me frame that a bit more. Is this like, have you got a promo calendar and you're working out what you should send every week, or is it a bit different to that?
Yeah, that's a great question. Let me actually go a little bit upstream and explain what we should do before we even start thinking about what to send. I mentioned earlier that segmenting in B2B environment is very different. So again, how D2C might segment based on engagement, B2B buyers are going to be segmented based on intent or buying signal. And so that means fundamentally you're going to have two kind of core segments. You're going to have customers that are inside their buying window, meaning they're highly likely to buy soon, today, tomorrow, this week, based on their own behavior. The second segment is customers that are outside their buying window. They're not really telling us that they're ready to buy. They might be opening an email, they might go to the website, but that's what I talked about around creating desire versus just capturing when that person is ready to buy. That's how you want to segment. It's not based off of engagement. It's based on the customer showing you, hey, I'm ready to buy, or hey, I'm not ready to buy. That's why Klaviyo or some of these, you know, D2C tools are actually very powerful because you can use them in that same way. So that's how I would recommend segmenting. And then to move into the content and campaign question, customers that are inside the buying window need to get more content, and that content needs to be focused on getting them to buy, right? We want to get them over the hump. They're already telling us, hey, I'm ready to buy. So that content should be reflective of where they're at in the journey. Customers that are outside of their buying window probably aren't ready to buy today. So we just need to nurture that relationship. We need to add value to them. We're not trying to convince them to buy. We're just trying to stay top of mind. So I'll pause there. I can get into the promotional calendar in a second, but I want to make sure that that's landing and clear.
That makes a huge amount of sense. It's almost like we're flipping it on its head, because kind of like in D2C, we'd use flows for the people who are high intent.
Yeah.
Rather than using the single send. So I get that. Questions on your segmentation. Are you basing that purely on user behavior, or does a kind of account status come into it? You know, like, this is a customer who order from us every week, or this is a customer who have a special pricing plan, or this one has a sales, you know, all that kind of like accountsy offline data, not just the online data.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think the beautiful thing about the segment approach that I just mentioned is you can customize it to your own needs. So what are your own customers suggesting put them inside of the buying window versus outside of the buying window. So if you have that data and it's flowing into your email marketing tool, yeah, you should use it. Like if there's a customer that is a weekly reorder or a monthly reorder, you can then set that up as a filter in that segment. Add those people to that segment if they buy every single month, right? So there's a number of things that you can do. That's definitely one of them. We have a client that separates their customer base by tier. So tier one is the highest spend, tier three is the lowest spend. Well, if a tier one customer even sniffs the website, we want to know, right? Like we want to have that person on the inside of the buying window segment. And then there's other things like how often are they viewing products on the site? If they go to the site three times in a week, they're probably high buying intent. Are they submitting quotes? Are they adding items to their cart? Are they building a list? Are they requesting terms? Whatever that behavior is that suggests, hey, this person is highly likely to buy soon, that is a customer that goes inside the buying window. And then everyone else sort of goes outside the buying window.
Now, the ones who are outside the buying window, I'm assuming this is a trick question, but are you sending them nothing or are you sending them something?
Yeah, we're still mailing to them, and I'm actually oversimplifying it, so we can definitely get in the weeds a little bit. The inside the buying window is one static segment. Usually, it only has between 3 and 7% of your customer file at any given time. Right, it's the idea that only 5% of your customers are really in market at any time. That's the same concept for inside the buying window. Our outside the buying window, we do split into a few other buckets. So that one is segmented based off of engagement. So you have a customer that's outside their buying window. However, they've purchased in the last 30 days or they've engaged with us in the last 90 days or whatever. So we do have some sub segments inside of that. More engaged means they're going to get more emails from us and less engaged means they're going to get less. That obviously is helpful for the customer because it's annoying if you're sending 2-3 emails a week to someone who doesn't want to get them. But it also helps us because we want to land in the inbox, right? We want to send emails that are more likely to get opened and clicked, which means we need to land in the primary inbox. And if we start sending to people who aren't doing anything with our email, we're going to quickly land in spam or promotions or some other folder that we don't want to land in.
Got you. So we've got segments going on within all of this, but two broad groups, the about to buy and the outside about to buy. And then what type of content are you sending them?
Yeah, it's a great question. So let me actually answer that with a format first, and then I'll explain the specific content. So one other major difference in B2B, and this sort of is a little jarring to D2C folks who spend so much time designing beautiful emails. If you looked at our emails, you would laugh because every single one of our emails is text-based. There's one link in it and it's less than 100 words. D2C is the opposite, right? It's like, it's very beautifully designed. There's dozens of links often and there's a bunch of graphics in it, right? And it's long. That's not how business buyers operate. Think about the person on the other end of that business transaction. They're busy. They're probably placing orders from other places today. They don't have time to like scan through your whole catalog. Your goal is to just stay top of mind and get them back to the website so that they can place an order soon, right? And so that's how we format our emails, which actually makes the content of those emails very simple. We don't need to worry about stuffing them full of a bunch of products or categories. All we really need to focus on is 5 different types of emails. We call this our DRIVE framework. You can steal it, D-R-I-V-E. D is differentiators. These are, why are we different from our competitor? When they think about us, what are they thinking about? We want to drive that home. So for a B2B brand, that might be, hey, we have faster shipping. We have free shipping. We have product experts if you call us. We have credit terms. Like what are the things that you might take for granted in your business, but are true differentiators from you and a competitor? R is recommendation. So in B2B, you're talking about massive catalogs. You want to get that customer into a different category a lot of times as well. Go cross category and expand their lifetime value. So R is going to expose the customer to other categories or other products that they may not be purchasing. And again, R is recommendation. I is influence. This is a testimonial. This is telling stories of your customers. That one doesn't just necessarily result in a lot of direct click revenue, but it does help build trust with your audience. V is then value. So we're talking about that outside the buying window segment. That's where that V, that value email really comes in handy. We want to add value to them. We want to help them do their job better. We want to make it easier for them to buy. We want to add value. I mean, that's pretty self-explanatory. I think everyone knows what that is at this point. And then E is enticement. So we want to try to get that order over the finish line. We want to entice them to go over the finish line. Now, this is going to be a little controversial and people can send their complaints directly to Chloe's inbox rather than mine. But I don't think discounting works in B2B. So in D2C, you can send coupons and do promos and things like that. More often than not, that doesn't really work in B2B. And it definitely doesn't work at scale, right? And so when I'm saying enticements, I'm not saying send a 10% off, send a coupon. What I am saying is remind them, hey, if you order this today, it's going to hit the truck by 4 p.m. Hey, if you order this today, that order is going to ship for free. Hey, if you order this now, you're going to get a free gift with that purchase. So that's what I mean is you're enticing them. You're reminding them, hey, you probably need to get this order out. We have it in stock. It's ready to go. And here's the reasons why. So D-R-I-V-E, Drive framework, that's the actual content that we're sending. And every single one of our emails fits neatly into one of those categories. And you can kind of say the same thing a bunch of different ways.
Nice. I love that division of it across the Drive mnemonic there. I totally get what you're saying about the enticement there, because it's easy. Yes, we have to remember when we're doing B2B marketing that we're selling to human beings, but it's not coming out of the human being's wallet when they're buying it. So it's like you can give them a discount, but that's probably not, as you say, that's not the biggest trigger to purchase, because it doesn't actually help that individual, and you're trying to influence the individual to make the purchase, whereas this will be here tomorrow and therefore the warehouse team will be off my back because they'll have enough packaging supplies again, is a much bigger...
Correct.
Yeah, okay, great. I'll get on with it.
Yeah. We have a customer who sells fasteners, so nuts and bolts and screws and rivets and all that kind of stuff. Their major differentiator is that orders placed are pick, packed, and on the truck in 6 minutes. So if you went on their website right now, it would hit the truck in 6 minutes, which is huge. Like, that's very fast. So as an enticement, an email that sounds like that, hey, if you order now, that'll actually hit the truck in 6 minutes. Like, that's way more enticing to that business buyer than take 10% off. And now you actually have to do more work because you got to enter the coupon. You got to make sure that all the products qualify, like whatever the case might be. It just doesn't necessarily work. So if you're a D2C brand and you're shifting into B2B, or you're kind of trying to grow your B2B arm, the playbook of grow by discounting or grow by frequent promotions, it might work a little bit, but ultimately that's not how you want to build your email marketing program or your marketing program in general when you enter the B2B space.
Going back to format quickly, we're sending these essentially plain text emails out that are short, to the point, with the one link in them.
Yep.
Are we sending those from the company name or from the sales rep's name, or who's it coming from?
Yeah, we do both. We've played around with this quite a bit, and generally, like, the results are pretty mixed. What I would say that we usually see is emails from the brand result in higher revenue. Direct click revenue, brands, emails that are from the person result in better engagement. So I'm of the mindset that I think you need both. So when Chloe, when you're saying that, just to be clear for anyone listening, that might sound like Chloe at Acme Supply, you know, or Kyler from Acme Supply or whatever, right? So that's what we do. We call it the friendly from. Who is the friendly from? And so we've tested both pretty extensively, and I would say, like, generally speaking, I don't have a clear winner because I think they both do things that are important.
And I can see how different ones would fit well in different ones of the different Drive types of emails you were talking about. Yeah. And of course, it would change from business to business depending on how prevalent your sales team are in the mix as well.
Yeah. We had a client that we launched their email marketing program. They had around 50,000 contacts that they had never emailed before. And so we couldn't just blindly email them. We had to warm up the domain and, you know, stuff that we won't necessarily get into in this conversation. But the first email didn't have any links in it, and it was written from the CEO. And the heart of it was essentially, hey, you're getting this because at some point you've purchased from us. We want to earn a spot in your inbox. Here's what you can expect from us. Hit reply with, we had some specific question that we were asking them. That flow, again, it was only around 40 or 50,000 contacts, generated over 500 replies. 500 replies, because people were thinking it was from a real person, and it was, in a sense. And they replied to every email, meaning the brand, you know, got those emails and replied to them. That same CEO called us a few months later, and he said, hey, whenever I go to trade shows, people are stopping me and they're saying, I love the emails I get from you. I'm like, you don't hear that in email marketing. Like, when does somebody stop you and say, I love the emails I'm getting from you? Like, that's crazy, right? Well, that's what happens when you humanize it. Like, it's, email is a human channel. I would actually challenge D2C folks to think more like that. But for B2B specifically, it's human-human, right? Even though it's B2B, it's still H2H, right? And so you think about the purpose of email is to be relational. It's to build a relationship and a connection with the person on the receiving end of that and to ask them to reply. You want them to engage in a conversation with you. That's how we email in our personal lives. That's how we email one-to-one, right? You and I emailed before the show. Like, that's how it works. And so our email marketing should actually be an extension of that, not a replacement of it.
So let's talk flows, because we promised the audience we'd talk a bit about flows. They're clearly less important in B2B e-commerce from what we've just been talking about. What flows do you need? I mean, is it abandoned carts 101 as per normal?
Yeah, 100%. I would say this is where it's going to mirror the D2C experience. Abandoned carts still matter. Browse abandonment still matters. Welcome flows still matter. Post-purchase flows still matter. Like if you looked at the flows we set up for clients, you're probably like, yeah, that's about what I would expect. Now, where you do start to get a little bit of nuance is your abandoned cart flow. We like to split that into high value versus everyone else. And you want to ping a sales rep as an example. D2C doesn't necessarily do that. But again, if you can imagine a business buyer placing a $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 order, that cart gets abandoned. Marketing's probably not going to convert that. I want a human to pick up the phone and help close that deal. So there's some nuance there. Those are text-based as well, so we don't design them. The one difference is we do put product images in those because they can be populated dynamically and it's helpful to show people what they're buying. But those are text-based as well, very simple in their design. And then you can certainly add more complex flows like in any other, you know, environment. Like you can do things like quote follow-up flows or second order assist or things that will help kind of fill the gap there. But those are usually not like crazy high earners.
Nice. And Carla, is there anything we've missed that those doing B2B e-commerce need to know about their emails? I mean, I'm sure there's like a million and one things, but any key elements we've not covered?
I would just reiterate that, and I would say this to D2C as well, but I would just reiterate that you should never be blasting your list. Like we're talking about segmenting and you should be sending to those segments. Like I would say we maybe only once or twice have ever emailed a full list. And that was when the list was very, very warmed up. That's because customers are at different points in the buying journey. So if you send the same email to everyone, you're treating everyone as the same in the buying journey, right? And so in B2B, that absolutely doesn't work. D2C, you can get away with it a little bit. So you definitely want to avoid that. And I think protecting deliverability is another big one. That's the case in D2C as well. But if you don't land in the inbox, you can have the best email in the world and it's not going to matter. So that's probably the only other thing that I would say. But no, if you're sitting there thinking this is a lot simpler than I thought it would be, that's because it is. Like it's a relational channel. It does not have to be that complex. Let your segmenting, let your formatting, and let your content do the heavy lifting.
Nice. Thank you for all of that, Kyla. It's been great chatting to you about it all. Listeners, make sure you stay tuned right to the end because you are not going to want to miss out on Kyla's insider tips on all of this and my suggestions for other ways we can help you. I think it would be impossible to be in e-commerce and not have heard of Klaviyo. Over 193,000 brands in over 80 countries use Klaviyo to drive their email marketing, SMS campaigns, and sales performance. The way Klaviyo are incorporating AI and personalization across the platform is one to watch for all of us, enabling their users to really push ever upwards the performance of their customer communications. If you want to see what you can now get with the Klaviyo platform, maybe have a poke around to work out if it's yet time to migrate, then you can sign up for a free trial right now. Just head to keepopt.com/Klaviyo and find out if it's time for you to make the move. Okay, Kyla, so far we've gone deep into B2B e-commerce email marketing. Now you get to wow us with your insider knowledge about the whole of email marketing. So for the following questions, your answer can be anything to do with email marketing, which of course includes everything we've already been talking about. Kyla, are you ready for the insider tips?
Chloe, I'm terrified, but I'm ready.
Awesome. Well, no, we've properly scared you if you start coming out with mum sector advice,
yeah,
taking
okay,
you back right, in time. let's start with newbie advice. If we've inspired someone to take their first step, what do they need to know to give themselves the best chance of success?
Start with the list that you already have. Okay, so don't be allured by the siren song of cold email or lists that don't know you. folks that know you and trust you and have already bought from you are going to be your best place to start building a healthy email marketing program. So look back over the last year, 2 years, 3 years, grab that list, run it through some type of tool to help remove, you know, dated or bounced emails. There's a bunch of tools out there. They're very simple to use. And just start with that list and start by segmenting them from, is this customer going to buy or are they not going to buy? And think through what that process looks like for your customer. Again, things like a lot of engagement on the site, you know, filling out quotes or adding items to their cart, that customer is likely to buy, and then everyone else. So even if you just did those two things and then you started sending specific messages to both groups, you're going to be well ahead of the curve.
Nice. Okay. Once you've started, of course, you've got to keep optimizing. So what's your favorite way to improve performance?
Can I get into a super nerdy AI tip?
Oh yeah, please.
Here? Okay. All right. Sounds good. I feel like every conversation I'm having lately is merging into AI. So I'm trying to like not have that be the case. But I think for this, it's actually a great, great answer. So if you have Klaviyo specifically, but this would likely work with a lot of different places, is you're sitting on a tremendous amount of data and tremendous amount of data specifically around what actions that customer is taking. So I'll use Klaviyo as an example, but most other email tools do versions of this. In Klaviyo, if you go to your list and you click into any profile, on the right side, it's going to tell you exactly what that customer has done and when they've done it. Things like opening an email, clicking an email, viewing products on your website, starting checkout, logging in, everything. And it'll have timestamps, it'll have URLs. It's a tremendous amount of information just for that specific profile. Well, Klaviyo has this really cool thing called an MCP server, which connects to Claude or other LLM, you know, tools like ChatGPT. And so if you go to Claude, which is my LLM of choice right now, you go to the connectors section, you click on Klaviyo, all you have to do is log in, click approve, and you're good to go. What that allows you to do is actually get access to all of that data at scale. So you can go tell Claude, go pull every single profile event from customers who have ordered in the last 30 days. I want to do a macro analysis or whatever other context you want to give it. That's going to pull hundreds or thousands or even hundreds of thousands of data points. And you can start to say things like, what are signs that somebody buys before they actually buy? Well, it's going to come back and say, hey, 90% of customers view two or more products before they buy. Or, hey, if a customer adds an item to their cart, there's an 85% likelihood they're going to complete checkout in the next 24 hours or whatever those things are. And you can then use that to tighten up your segmenting. You can use it to tighten up the types of emails you send. You can use it to improve your flow timing, right? So I have found that to be tremendously helpful. We just ran one with a client that ended up having over 1 million events. I mean, imagine how much information you have like right there, right? And then we can just chat with the LLM to get more insight. So that's my tip.
That's a very valid, super geeky AI tip. I appreciate your desire to try and avoid talking about AI, but that is genius. And yeah, just my mind is trying to work out how you would do that without getting the AI to do it. And it would be an absolute nightmare to try and work that out.
My computer is just sitting on my desk burning when it's pulling all that data. So.
If someone listening wants to learn more, is there a cheap or free resource you would recommend?
Yeah. So, I'm gonna give a third party, and then I'll actually share one of ours that's a little bit weird. So I always think the book Building a Story Brand by Donald Miller is like must read for anyone who's trying to figure out how to talk to other humans and like tell stories. A lot of D2C folks are probably familiar with that. It's a great B2B framework, right? It helps you understand how to tell stories to your customers and how to identify their problems. And so you can use that in your email marketing in a ton of different ways. So I know that's like not an email marketing book per se, but I think it's a great book to understand kind of the humanness behind marketing in general. The second is I'm actually gonna send them to our website. I don't know if you've seen our website, Chloe, but it's really weird.
I have. It's very weird.
So we have this idea. So our website is goforwardstudios.com. And the reason I'm sending you there is because I think that email marketing should be really engaging. And this is our attempt at doing that. We were not getting any leads from our traditional website. And so we finally just said, you know what? Let's just make our website look like an email inbox. And so we built out this entire website that literally looks like you're inside of our inbox. There's a bunch of little Easter eggs. For instance, if you try to log out too many times, it will Rickroll you and it'll play Never Gonna Give You Up by Rick Astley. So like there's a bunch of fun stuff in there. But in general, that has a lot of stuff about how we think about email marketing and like how to make it be more human, how to reach business buyers as well. That's no opt-in needed. We don't need your email address or anything. You can just go there and poke around. But hopefully that's a fun and engaging resource for folks.
I mean, just to see a website done as an email inbox, I cannot believe I've never seen it done before because it seems so obvious once you see it. So huge kudos for you guys coming up with that idea. Finally, crystal ball time. What's coming up in the next 6 to 12 months that we should be getting ready for?
There's so many things. Christmas? No. I think in general, what we're starting, we've been seeing it. I'm going to keep this to email, but I think that email inbox providers, Google, Outlook, whoever else you're using, are starting to crack down on spam even more than they have. Like, and they've been trying to do that over the last 10 to 15 years. I think with how easy it is to write emails, send emails, and with AI kind of being running rampant, like a lot of these inbox providers are like, hold on, we need to protect our subscribers. Otherwise, they're just going to delete their account and leave. And so I think it's even more important than ever to be human, to show up and sound like a colleague, not like a robot. And so I think we just need to be more prepared for that. The brands that are already treating marketing like a relational channel are probably not going to be impacted by that in any meaningful way. But I think the brands that are doing kind of the AI slop and trying to just like do the volume game are going to get crushed. And we're already starting to see that.
Yeah. If there was ever a time to tidy up your database, now was the time to do it. Stop sending to the people who have emotionally unsubscribed, amongst other things. No, I think that's a really good point. Kyla, though, we are very nearly at the end of the show and the listeners need to know where they can get in contact with you and your business. So how can they do that, please?
Yeah, so I'm really active on LinkedIn. I've tried to post every day. I'm about a year and a half now with only a couple of misses. So I'm really active and engaged on LinkedIn. You can just search my name, Kyler Nixon, N-I-X-O-N, and I'm there. And then our website is goforwardstudios.com. If you want a little bit more of a normal website experience, you can click view our normal website in the top right corner and it kind of takes you out of that inbox experience. But yeah, those are the two ways to get in touch with us.
Awesome. Well, Kyla, thank you so much for being on the show. It's been fascinating chatting with you and learning the ins and outs and surprises of B2B email marketing. So thank you for being here.
So fun. Super honored to be here. Thanks, Chloe.
How fascinating was that? Lots to think about from how you get email delivering B2B e-commerce sales to your websites and beyond. Different format, different segmentation, different use of flows, and the drive types of emails, different, if I can read my writing, differentiations, recommendations, influence, value, and enticement. Really fascinating to talk to Kyla about all of that there. If you have thoughts on that, if you like that, if you like more B2B e-commerce stuff, then do let me know. You can get the links to what we discussed, the full transcript, important notes and more at keepoptimizing.com. You can also use our special direct episode short links. Just put keepopt.com/the number of this episode into the URL bar and you'll go straight to the right page. When you get there, you can also add yourself to our email list so you don't miss out on any of the other things I share to help you improve your business. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Keep Optimizing podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, then do check out episode 206 with Alex Weston from SparkLayer, which is all about building e-commerce B2B success. And in our previous episode, the one immediately before this, episode 309, Kate was taking us through a similar drive model, but for D2C. So if you really love that, but you want some hints on making it work for D2C, go and have a listen to 309. You can find all our email marketing content by scrolling up your feed or use the short link keepopt.com/email. Please do tell your fellow marketers about the show because I want to help as many marketers as possible to improve the performance of their e-commerce marketing. Have a great week and make sure you listen to the next episode so I can help you to keep optimizing your marketing.
Access everything Keep Optimizing at keepoptimizing.com. That's with an S, not a Z.
Time to migrate to Klaviyo. keepopt.com/Klaviyo for your free trial.